You are listening to an American Free Press podcast.
Joining me on the line is Victor Thorne, who just wrote a terrific chapbook called Sandy Hook, a critical analysis of the media's provocative journalistic practices and how they spawned a wave of alternate conspiracy theories. Victor, thanks for coming on today.
Good to be here, Dave.
Victor, let me ask you this right off the bat. You've written so far, like you told me prior to the interview, over 40 books and chapbooks at this point. Why Sandy Hook? What piqued your interest in Sandy Hook?
I was watching TV when it happened, when this all started coming down. And with any of these events, that's the best time to start gathering information. And within a day, this happened on December 14th of last year, by the 15th, there was already a slew of alternate versions of what people said they thought happened or ways they were debunking the mainstream media and what they were telling us. So what it came down to was you have to ask yourself one question. What physical evidence have we been presented with to prove that this event happened the way the media said that it happened? And I ask that because when somebody's a child, they believe things without seeing them. And a good example would be Santa Claus. Kids are told that Santa Claus exists and they believe it. Now, when we become adults, hopefully we need some proof that things that we can't see exist. And researching these different conspiracies for the past two decades, you realize what a con job that's been played on us. A good example would be Osama bin Laden. When he was supposedly murdered by the Navy SEAL Team 6, Americans were shown no photos, no video footage, no DNA tests. There was no funeral because he was buried at sea and he was disappeared. So are we supposed to accept that simply because the media and the government told us? If we go back a little bit further to 9/11, we were told that Flight 77 hit the Pentagon. Here's a plane that's 155 feet long with 120-foot wingspan with these two enormous engines on each wing, and yet all we saw was a 16-foot hole in one of the walls at the Pentagon. No wreckage, no seats, no dead bodies, no clothes strewn everywhere. And if you go onto the internet and simply type into Google airplane wreckage, every single wreck in history has one thing in common. There's debris there. There's wreckage, except for 9/11 with Flight 77. The same thing happened down in Shanksville with Flight 93, the same size airplane. Yet all we saw was a crater that was 20 foot wide and 10 foot deep. No plane. No plane was there. Even if we go to Barack Obama's birth certificate, without getting into whether he was born in Kenya or Hawaii or Denmark, wherever, without getting into that argument, we still haven't been shown an unaltered, unforged document. So are we supposed to believe that this document that the White House showed us is true simply because they say it's true? And if we get back, I guess, to the original analogy of Santa Claus, at least little kids, they'll see on a street corner near Christmas time a Santa Claus dressed up ringing a bell for the Salvation Army. Or they'll see a Santa Claus at the mall, or a Santa Claus will visit their school. So little kids have been shown more evidence than we've been shown with all of these examples and with Sandy Hook. So at Sandy Hook, what have we seen? Did we see any dead bodies wheeled out? Have we seen any bloody fingerprints on the wall or blood on the floor or broken glass on the ground? Have we seen anything? You know, I'm not going to tell people what to believe or not believe. I'm simply asking this question. What have we seen that proves that this event happens?
Why do you say on page 5 that the media was purposely provocative?
Well, that's an angle here that you have to look into what their intent is. And if their intent was to go in and use this Sandy Hook event as a reason to go after America's guns, well, it's failed miserably right there, because all their high hopes of outlawing the semi-automatics and these high-capacity magazines, it's not going to pass through Congress. All there's going to be is these few legislative executive orders that Barack Obama pushed through. But the left's big dream, and they've had this for decades and decades, of at least trying to disarm America or prevent the sales of certain types of weapons didn't work. So we have to think that the people in the mainstream media aren't complete idiots. Can't we at least assume that?
Right.
Yet they made so many mistakes, so many blatant mistakes and outright lies, that when I started talking to different people, it's almost as if it was a provocative type of event, that they're deliberately dangling these hooks with bait on them to see what's going to happen.
Like what?
Well, when you look at the lies, like one in there where this guy from NBC comes out and he says that Adam Lanza got into a big altercation in the parking lot of Sandy Hook the day before this event supposedly happened. And he named the date when it happened, the place where it happened, and even that there were four individuals from the Sandy Hook school that he got into this altercation with. Now, there's a great amount of specificity here. Time, place, and individuals. Yet, Paul Vance, who is one of the spokesmen for the state police, came out a few days later and debunked it and said this never happened. Now, how can you be that specific about all of these details and the entire thing is a lie? And that's only one example of many that are included in this book. So what they did was they were trying to establish some type of motive that why Adam Lanza, this 20-year-old vegetable, basically, that never left his house, that nobody had seen for 3 years, they needed some type of motive because people want to know. Well, if somebody goes in and supposedly kills 26 children and adults, we at least want to know why. Now, the first story they floated was that Adam Lanza's mother, who's named Nancy, she worked at the Sandy Hook school as a kindergarten teacher. And Adam was so resentful of her and the children as revenge, he went in there and slaughtered all the children. Also, this supposed incident in the parking lot, they floated this as his motive. Again, revenge. But both of them ended up being lies. They even trotted out a nurse from the school, a woman named Sally Cox, who went on camera and said, oh yeah, Nancy Lanza, she's worked there at the school. All the children love her. She's a great kindergarten teacher. This woman worked at the school for 15 years. You can't get that wrong. A nurse that works at the school for 15 years, and this school only had 450 children, she can't get that wrong.
Right.
That Nancy Lanza worked at the school as a kindergarten teacher, and all the kids loved her. Again, a great deal of specificity, except it was an outright lie.
Was this on video?
Oh, yeah. It was the reporter reporting for WUSA reported this information and mentioned this. She said specifically, the school nurse who worked at Sandy Hook for 15 years. So this is very specific.
You mean USA Today? Or?
Yeah. USA okay. Today, the reporter said that.
Huh.
Quoting the nurse, allegedly.
And has there been any follow-up on this?
Well, the only follow-up is when all of the alternative researchers started pointing this and many other similar incidents out and posting them on these videos on YouTube and so forth. And finally, it reached such critical mass when these videos are getting 10 million views that the government and mostly the media, like Salon.com, they come out then and they have to start debunking this, trying to debunk it. And with Sally Cox, they said, well, you know, there's a big conspiracy that she didn't even work there and that her real name was Sarah Cox. Well, her name is Sarah Cox, but she goes by the name Sally Cox. So see, that debunks the conspiracy. Well, no, it hasn't debunked any conspiracy about her saying that Nancy Lanza worked at the school for 15 years. All it did was it was a diversionary tactic that said, oh, wait, some conspiracy researcher said that Sally Cox didn't work there, but her real name is Sarah Cox. So see, they frame it in that context to divert attention away from the original thing was that why did this nurse supposedly say to a television reporter that Nancy Lanza worked at the school as a kindergarten teacher? It's a complete and total lie.
Right. It's kind of like saying that the protocols of the Elders of Zion are a forgery, not addressing whether or not they're accurate in any way, right?
Right. The information contained in them, yeah.
Do you know if anybody's been able to follow up with this particular lady, this nurse?
Well, right now, there's been a gag order, a 90-day gag order on the families and the victims involved. So you can't even get access to these people because a judge has laid down a gag order for 90 days. That's one big problem. Another problem with this Sally Cox was that she changed her version of events. She said originally that Adam Lanza, after he burst into the school, he went into her office. And her exact words were that they met eyes. Their eyes met, okay? And for some reason, Adam Lanza didn't kill her. Now, he's this psychopathic killing machine, we're told, that's killing everything in sight. But for some reason, he doesn't kill the nurse, okay? And she identifies them. They lock eyes. You would think if someone's a mass murderer, they want to get rid of all the eyewitnesses. But anyway, she says that he didn't kill her. Then later, she gives another version of events that says after Adam Lanza supposedly burst into the school, she hid under her desk and that he probably walked into her office. Probably walked in. So those are two vastly different accounts of what happened. Where first, where she identifies him and locks eyes, and then second time she's under a desk and he probably walked by. So when you start hearing these things, shouldn't alternative researchers, also called conspiracy theorists, shouldn't they be asking questions about that?
That would make sense, I think. But
yeah.
Even this character, and I'm using that word, this character Anderson Cooper, he was involved in putting a fake news clip on, wasn't he?
Yeah, there was a live action drill at a school about a mile and a half from Sandy Hook. And during the day, CNN showed footage of seven SWAT team members storming into this school that was a mile and a half away. But all it was a drill. It wasn't an actual terrorist event. Well, anyway, CNN during the day uses this footage, but saying that this is what happened at Sandy Hook. Then at 8 o'clock at night, when Anderson Cooper's show comes on, now this 10 hours have passed, 10 hours. They had that much time to fact check whether this footage was taken at Sandy Hook or some other school. Well, Anderson Cooper played it off as if it was happening at Sandy Hook, and they have the breaking news graphics up at the top, and it wasn't from that school. Now, conspiracy theorists analyze this footage and they start looking at Sandy Hook. And they say, wait a second, this isn't that school. They're telling us that this happened at Sandy Hook, but look, nothing looks like it. So then they go into Google. See, nowadays we have this thing called technology where you can go into Google or into Bing and you can look from their aerial maps and start looking at other schools. And these, you know, the bad conspiracy theorists who are so awful, they go to this school, it's St. Rosa or something to that effect. They go to this school and they realize, oh, this is where the footage came from. This was a live action drill there, not at Sandy Hook. But we were being lied to. We were being manipulated into believing that these SWAT team members stormed into Sandy Hook when it never happened.
Right. What are the reasons that you would attribute to this obviously huge error? Could it be that they just wanted to drum up ratings? Could it be that Anderson Cooper is as stupid as he looks? Could it be that there's a nefarious reason why this was done? What do you think?
Without being able to read their minds, I can't imagine that one of the biggest news networks on the planet Earth, where they have complete rooms devoted simply to fact-checking, that they would get this wrong. So, especially 10 hours later, when Anderson Cooper aired it and depicted it as being real, if that's not the case, then you have to ask, why are they doing this? Why are they deliberately deceiving the American public? You know, I would prefer to have them answer that question, because I can't read their minds. But why are they deliberately lying to the American people? When people lie, there's a motive behind it. So, you know, I'll let other people fill in the blank there, but it's obvious that they are lying.
Thank goodness for the conspiracy theorists, or as you call them in the book, I think it's conspiratologists, is that right?
Yeah, I use that word, conspiratologist, yeah.
I've never seen anything like this in my life, where an event like this has really drawn this much interest from average people, have you?
That's how I framed the book. And started off that there's so much suspicion right now that people are so disgusted with the government and so distrustful of the mainstream media that when Sandy Hook happened, that immediately they swooped down on it and realized that we were getting fed a bill of goods, that what they were telling us wasn't the way it happened. And it ends up being now that every time a spike event happens, considering how much technology is at our disposal, that the powers that be have to realize that they can't get away with stuff like they used to in the past. You know, when John Kennedy was assassinated, or Bobby Kennedy, or even 9/11. 9/11 was really the beginning of the personal computer revolution, where everybody had a computer in their home. But now, 10 years after that, you have these kids that grew up in the shadow of 9/11 that don't buy into the official story. And they grew into, now they're 20s, they're Generation Xers or Millennials or whatever they're called, and they're good with technology. They know what they're doing. They're much better at it than I am, that's for sure. And once they started analyzing this, they realized, wait a second, it doesn't add up. So, you know, that's the way this book is framed. And then it shows, it analyzes how the media was steering us in so many different instances in the wrong direction.
Yeah, it seems like the media produced a lot of what they considered to be facts and then never followed up on them. Like, for example, that fella that, well, that was one of the first things that was heard. There were a couple of people, they were from New Jersey, and I was thinking when I first heard it, wow, they drove from New Jersey to Connecticut to do this. One guy was caught in the woods, he was wearing camouflage gear and this and that, and this guy, Chris Manfredonia. Have we heard anything from this guy or from any of the media regarding what really happened?
only other than his name.
Wow.
I don't believe that, at least as far as what I've seen, and I've paid close attention to this, I haven't seen any on-camera interviews with him saying, oh yeah, I'm the guy. And no, there hasn't. And what's interesting is that this information that contradicted what the media was telling us became so prolific and so widespread that a guy named Lieutenant Paul Vance had to come out and hold a press conference and say that he was going to prosecute, he intended to prosecute any individuals that were posting or publishing misinformation on the website. Now, if he was serious about this, the first people that would be handcuffed and perp walked would be from CNN, ABC, CBS, NBC, the Associated Press, because they're the ones that were putting out all of the misinformation. All the conspiracy theorists were doing was correcting it and saying, no, look, that's not what happened. This is what happened here. So Anderson Cooper should have been arrested. And all of these other anchors at these news services should have been arrested if Paul Vance was serious, because they're the ones putting out the misinfo.
There's still time to arrest him, and they should, but...
it would be a welcome.
Right, I mean, just fire him, but that's not going to happen. I noticed that things had gotten so out of control for the mainstream media that this Cooper guy even had to address some of the conspiracy theorist claims on his show, right?
That's true, and see, that's when people in our line of work, in our field, know that they've been successful, is that they've reached such critical mass that they've broken through. They've broken through to where the mainstream media can no longer ignore it, and they have to address it and try to convince the rest of society that, wait, don't listen to them. They're all crazy, they're crackpots, they're dangerous, don't listen to them. I mean, the same thing happened with 9/11 truthers. Why do we know the term 9/11 truthers? It's because we broke through. We broke through and forced them to address their lies. The same thing happened with birthers. You know, why do we know the term birthers? It's because we broke through into the mainstream and said, all we want, we only want one thing. We want an unforged birth certificate. Show us that. Show us something that hasn't been photoshopped with 9 different layers. Once you do that, we'll be satisfied. But they haven't been able to do that yet. Now, the same thing is, you know, I don't know if they call them Sandy Hookers or whatever it is, but Anderson Cooper, Salon.com, and a few other websites had to address this information and try to calm down the rest of society, because they pay attention to numbers. Believe me, they pay attention to it. And when they go onto YouTube and see, the last time I checked, this one video had 10 million plus hits, and a bunch of other ones were in the millions and way up high in the hundreds of thousands, they're saying, whoa, we got a problem on our hands here now. So they have to go out with their tail between their legs and, you know, really point fingers and say, these are the crazy people. They live in a different universe. Don't listen to them.
This is very similar to 9/11, I think, like mm-hmm. you have mentioned. What happens is, I've found, is that people want to believe what they want to believe. It's not like you or me or other people who think they or may have an open mind, and we want to hear facts before we make up our mind, regardless of how it makes us feel. But I found that this event, like 9/11, they're very similar. And when you broach the subject to people that you believe that something's amiss here, something's not exactly right. Oh, no, those children died. They died. No, they're so sure that they died.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you experienced this from talking to people, but they'll walk away from you.
Well, what I've noticed actually is the opposite, where a few days ago I talked with a woman I'd never spoken to before in my life. She didn't know anything about me. She doesn't know what I do. You know, I write books, conspiracy theories, anything. Nothing about it. And we were talking about this and that and a few other things. And then Sandy Hook came up and she says, don't even get me started on this. Don't even get me started on all the lies they've been telling us. So this is an everyday average person that already knows and is disgusted by what she's been seeing. Of course, there's always going to be, I guess, the children that believe in Santa Claus. And, you know, once a kid gets to be 6, 7, 8 years old or whatever, and they're right on that cusp, they're very resistant because they know that they've invested in Santa Claus. They've invested. But Dave, one thing we have to really point out is that in this alternative media, we've been told for a decade, the mainstream media is the enemy, right? The media is the enemy. So why, considering all the mistakes and all the lies and all the red herrings they toss to us, why would we believe them? If they're the enemy and we know they lied, if we know the government lies to us, why would we believe them? Shouldn't it be the opposite? Shouldn't we demand, we'll only believe you when you tell us the truth? Why would we blindly accept what the media is telling us in any regard?
Well, you're right. But there you go. There's the rub. Because there are so many people who still believe, and like you said, they've invested in this belief. There's so many people who still believe that, they're not going to give it up.
Yeah, and you know, for this book, well, and actually even for an article for American Free Press, I interviewed a guy named Bart Van Ness. And I asked him, I said, well, why don't you believe the official story? And he said, well, after Operation Northwoods and all the lies about Vietnam and the USS Liberty and 9/11 and the lies about WMDs, why should I believe them? They have a long track history of lying to us. And I don't believe anything the government tells me. I don't believe anything the mainstream media tells me until I find it out for myself. And anyone that blindly stumbles into this and says, well, you know, Adam Lanza killed 26 kids, you have to believe that. Why? Why do we have to believe that? Especially when the media is the enemy.
Yeah, it's common sense to you and me, but unfortunately, I think it's going to take a long time for a real critical mass to build. They're not even asking about Building 7. I mean, that was the most obvious demolition. That's still, right, we're talking coming up on, what, 12 years ago?
Yeah,
12 years
exactly.
ago, and I don't know if you're holding out any hope for something to change, but I don't think I am. I mean, how much more time has to go by until somebody says, wait a second, a building doesn't collapse like that from having one fire in an office? But and that's why this really feels like 9/11 to me, this incident.
Yeah. The only success that I see, or the, I guess the best success, is that when we break through and they have to address this. Because what you said before, people will believe what they want to believe. That's the most important saying that there's ever been. People will believe what they want to believe. So when it comes to corrupt entities like the government and the mainstream media, they're never going to retract and say, oh yeah, we were involved in 9/11. We were involved in the JFK assassination. They're never, ever going to say that. So the best hope we have, and I was encouraged, was that when I saw all of these people push back, the conspiracy theorists, and say, sorry, we're not buying it this time. Go peddle it somewhere else. And then when the American people stood up and said, you're not going to take our damn guns now either. And instead of rolling over and playing dead, people flocked in droves to the stores, and the shelves are bare right now. There's no ammo left. They bought millions of guns. And that, to me, is the best encouragement, is that we're not rolling over completely and saying, oh, you wanted to use this Sandy Hook thing as a pretext so that you can come in and pass legislation and then try to do some kind of massive gun grab like they did in Australia. Well, the people of America said, sorry, we're not going to let it happen this time. So there is some hope.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree with that. And I did not think it was going to happen in the way that it did. And I'm sure they didn't either. Just like, for example, having the legislation ready, just like the Patriot Act.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can't have that kind of legislation ready so soon after an event like 9/11.
Yeah, exactly.
And you can't have this kind of gun control legislation ready so soon after this event. I agree with you. That was heartening, to say the least, very heartening, that people said, no, you're not going to touch our guns. It has to do more with mental issues than it does with the actual weapon. Because one fella I heard, I don't know if you saw that video on YouTube. I can't remember the guy's name. I think his last name was Ong, O-N-G, Jason Ong or something like Chris Ong. Anyway, he went in front of a city council meeting, I think it was, in Connecticut, maybe in Newtown. But he pointed out all of the flaws in their argument. And basically the one he said that made the most sense was that for decades and decades, there have been rifle clubs in schools and throughout the whole United States. Why hasn't anything happened then? Why is it just happening now? Could it be that societal breakdown has something to do with it?
Or that they're psyops, you know, that these are engineered events. I mean, if you look back to Columbine, and in my book, New World Order Assassins, I have a whole chapter on Columbine, and multiple shooters in that school beyond Harris and Klebold. So, you know, was this just two whacked out high school kids that did this? Hell no. I mean, there were people in black masks, dressed in black all over the place, shooting all over, even after Harris and Klebold were killed. There's still shooting going on inside the school. So how could, you know, the two lone nut assassins be shooting after they're already dead? The whole thing was a scam. And, you know, when you couple all of these together, like I say in the book, even though they point fingers at us and say, you're the conspiracy theorist, you're bad, and you're like some kind of Frankenstein's monster that's out of control now. Just remember, Frankenstein's monster didn't create itself. There's a reason, there's a cause and effect that none of us, Dave, would even be in this field if the government and the media simply told us the truth. there would be no need for us. Nobody would look at what we're doing, because even at the end of the book, I said, if everything happened the way the government and media said at Sandy Hook, this book would never be written. Why? Because there would be nothing to write about.
Exactly. At some point, the mainstream media is going to have to incorporate, as they have done in many other arenas, they're going to have to incorporate or create their own conspiracy division, where they're going to have, because you're talking about, like you said, 10 million hits, 20 million hits, 1 million hits. They want to get those eyeballs, and they want to make money.
Yeah.
So if they can grab those eyeballs and say, look, hey, we've got our own little division here, our conspiracy division, and we're going to tell you what the mainstream news isn't telling you. You don't have to listen to it. You can turn it off, or you can turn it on. It's up to you. But here, get it from us. Get the news from us. Did you ever think that something like that might happen?
Well, I'll take it one step further, is that these kids now that are 30 years and younger don't even pay attention to the mainstream media anymore. They get their information elsewhere. And this is a great concern to the media, a great concern, because they realize their numbers are dropping and that these kids aren't buying their newspapers. They're not buying their magazines. They're not tuning in to their nightly news shows. They're going on the internet and they're going to alternative sites, and that's where they're getting their information. So the prevalence or the importance of the mainstream media isn't even what it used to be. I mean, heck, I remember when I was a kid, I'm sure you do too, there were the three networks. There was Walter Cronkite, there was NBC, and there was ABC. And that's where people sat at 6:30 at night and they got their news about the world. Now, these kids aren't watching the nightly newscasts. They're not watching that. They're going on their cell phones or other computers, and they're finding news for themselves.
Right.
So their fortress is crumbling, and they know that it's crumbling.
That's a shame.
It really is a shame, huh?
I feel bad. Yeah, they're going on their smartphones and their tablets, and they're tapping into this type of stuff. They're more interested in finding out what the mainstream media is not telling them.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the, and you've talked about this in the book here on page 17 and 18, and this is probably for me anyway, and I haven't paid that much attention to Sandy Hook as many people have, but one of the things that I thought was odd was this Emily Parker photograph.
Uh-huh.
Let me know if I'm going in the right direction here, but here, this is the dad. I think this maybe has grabbed the most attention. This dad, I think his name was Robbie, right?
Mm-hmm.
Robbie Parker. He's about to speak in front of some camera. I don't even know who it was.
For the whole bank of cameras.
Okay. For the whole bank of cameras, thank you. And he's obviously, they didn't say Akin yet, or whatever they say.
Mm-hmm.
So he's kind of getting prepared for it. He seems to be in a very good mood. I don't know what day that was. Could that have been the night that it happened?
No, it wasn't that night. It was a couple of days afterward. But this was a big event because he was the quote-unquote first parent to address the media.
Okay.
And it was at night, so there's a whole bank of cameras, all the big networks are there. And all they showed on TV was his speech, where he was saying, oh, I'm going to forgive this killer, and it's the Christian thing to do, and my daughter's in heaven, and blah, 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 okay? All the typical stuff. But what people didn't see was what you just described, Dave, everything happening beforehand. And here this guy is laughing, joking, and then right before the cameras are ready to go live, he says, well, should I read off of the card, meaning the cue card? And I'm not going to say, is this the way a person grieves or not grieves? People can decide that for themselves. But what I will say is that if I had a 6-year-old son or daughter that just got their brains splattered out, I sure as hell wouldn't be laughing and joking, and I wouldn't be in such a jovial mood as that, and I wouldn't need cue cards, Dave, to tell me how I should be grieving in front of the cameras. They turn the cameras on and say, and I'd say, Christ almighty, my kid just got slaughtered there. My life is ruined. It's destroyed. I'm never going to recover for this. I'm probably never going to smile again for the rest of my life because all I can see in my mind is their blood and brains splattered all over the floor. Why do you need a cue card for that?
Why do you laugh and smile?
Why do you laugh and smile 30 seconds before the cameras go live? Yeah, it's freaky.
It doesn't make any sense. And I think anybody who saw that, the argument they bring up, the people who so desperately want to believe that this happened, the argument they bring up is that, well, you can't, just like you said, you can't really judge on how somebody's going to grieve. But this is not, I'm sorry, this is not normal by any sense of the imagination.
No, no, it's a freak show is what it is.
Right.
And it wasn't the only instance. There's many other instances where all of these families seem to be like they're going to the county fair.
That's what I can't figure out. That's why I wanted to bring up Emily.
Yeah.
The picture was shown all over the internet, and I've mentioned it so many times before, but I haven't watched television in over 2 decades. I'm not going to, so I don't get my videos or photos from the television. I get them from the internet, and I don't know what they're doing on TV. I didn't even know that what you just said about Robbie Parker talking about he's going to forgive the guy. I didn't even go that far into it.
Mm-hmm.
But the mainstream media is showing this photograph of Emily Parker, if this is her, in that dress, that black and red dress, over and over and over again. It was either her or Endor, that other fella. I think Posner was his name, that other poor kid. Okay.
Yeah, Posner.
Posner, okay. Those two, it seems like, were the poster childs for this Sandy Hook event, if I'm right.
Yeah.
This is what I don't get. If the mainstream media was putting up the wrong photograph of this girl, Emily Parker, then they would have rushed to let people know, hey, wait a second, that's Emily's sister.
Mm-hmm.
Because how could it be that, and to my untrained eye, how could it be that that exact girl is, like you said, there at the county fair with Obama?
Yeah, yeah.
How? Could you just explain that to me? I don't get it.
Yeah, that's a great point. And we have to go back a step beforehand where there's this family photo taken of the Parker family. And there's Robbie and the wife and Emily and her two younger siblings. Okay. Except when you look at the photo of them, the two younger siblings don't have any legs. They're completely cropped out of it. So immediately, people that are savvy on the internet, that, I mean, people Photoshop stuff millions of times a day now. They're looking at this photo and saying, the two siblings don't have any legs. Somebody please show me where the legs are. And so I look at the photo and I'm looking and looking and looking and they don't have any legs. They don't have any legs. Where are their legs at? So already people are a little suspicious. Like, has this been Photoshopped? Then President Obama visits Sandy Hook, and this would have been December 16th, 2 days after the event. And we're shown this picture of Obama with the Parker family. And on his lap, now Obama has a grin from ear to ear. This is the same Obama that was crying the crocodile tears at his press conference. Everyone's like, that's fake crying. Where's the tears at? So anyway, so he's sitting there in this school, grinning from ear to ear, and there's this little girl on his lap grinning from ear to ear. And then people look at the Parker family photo and they say, this is the exact same girl. She's wearing the same exact red dress with the black top. She has the same blonde hair. She has the exact same part. She has the same metal ring in her hair that she has in the family photo. Now, am I saying 100% absolutely this is Emily Parker? No, but I'll say what everybody else was saying. This looks exactly like Emily Parker, except Emily Parker is supposed to be dead. How can this be? How can this person look 99.999% exactly like Emily Parker? The debunkers say, oh, that's the sister. Well, if that's the sister, think of how morbid this would be to dress her in the same exact dress, to have the same exact part in her hair, to have the same exact ring in her hair as Emily had, the slain sister. I mean, like I said, this is getting into freak show area.
Yeah, I don't understand the whole thing, where the apologists are saying, well, that's her sister, but, you know, she was just wearing the same dress. Has there been any mainstream media attention paid to this disturbing fact here?
No, other than Salon.com, which was the big debunking article, the mainstream hasn't addressed this at all, other than Anderson Cooper, who did, I think it was an 11-minute segment on one of his shows where he was addressing these various anomalies and inconsistencies. But other than that, I believe, if I would look into the psychology of the powers that be, that they don't want to debunk these now because all it would do is just arouse more suspicions among the people that haven't heard this stuff. Because if they go on TV and they show this picture and say, oh, no, we're debunking this now, people looking at it would say, like, Jesus, that looks exactly like the little girl, but she's supposed to be dead. How is she sitting on Obama's lap? So I don't think they can, Dave, because it would blow back on him even further.
This is what I don't understand. I know that the mainstream media would have to, if it was a wrong photograph, they would have to quickly come out because they could get sued, seriously.
Mm-hmm.
They would have to quickly come out and say, we're sorry, this was a wrong person, here's the right photograph. Nothing. Zero.
No.
Zilch.
No, they haven't done it. No. Let's get into another guy here. This guy named Gene Rosen.
Yeah.
Who's become the poster boy for bad acting. And this guy, now listen to this story, Dave. I mean, how preposterous it is. He's one of the closest houses to Sandy Hook. And there's Sandy Hook, then there's the fire station where supposedly all the kids were evacuated to. And then right nearby there is Gene Rosen's house. So on the morning that this happened, December 14th, we were told there were over 100 shots fired inside that school from an AR-15, a Bushmaster. You're a military guy. You know how loud a gun is. And I live here on a mountain. I know that when people are hunting up on the top of the mountain, I can hear it down here midway at the bottom of the mountain. This is quite a distance away. So Gene Rosen's living almost a stone's throw from this school, doesn't hear over 100 shots being fired. How can that be? Then he says he's going outside to feed his cat. And he looks out his door, and there's six little kids sitting at the end of his driveway, plus a school bus driver, plus another adult. Now, in one of the stories, he said that the school bus driver was a female. In his next version of the story, he said the school bus driver was a male. So it's either a woman or a man. 50-50 chance.
Right.
But, you know, it's a woman or a man. It's one or the other. And he invites them inside his house. Now, can you imagine how traumatized, well, not even traumatized, they would be in shock that these people were. He invites them into the house. He gives them milk and cookies. They're playing with stuffed animals. And he was interviewed on TV. I saw this interview live with Megyn Kelly of Fox News. And she says, well, Mr. Rosen, when did you find out about the shooting at Sandy Hook? And he says, well, after about 15 minutes that they were here, they told me about the shooting. Now, 15 minutes is an eternity.
Yeah.
So here's the adult bus driver, either a man or a woman, and the other adult. And they wait for 15 minutes and finally say, oh, by the way, Gene, just so you know, some psychopath went into the school and killed 20 kids and six adults at the school. There's blood everywhere. It's a slaughter. What happened? So, oh, yeah, we just wanted you to know 15 minutes later.
And I didn't know that before I read your book, and I didn't understand that. That would be the first, right? Wouldn't that be, I mean, like, you know, what are you kids doing here at the end of my driveway? Oh, we're just
hanging out.
Right, we're with our androgynous bus driver.
Well, and that would mean also that the kids would have to walk past the fire station where supposedly all the kids were evacuated to. But then again, Dave, when WABC, they had a news chopper there above the school. And I say in the book, people want to see physical evidence. People want to see things. We're a visual type of people. Where's the evacuation of all the kids? At the school, all we see is one police car, one fire truck, and a few guys milling around. No ambulances. Now, you wouldn't want to have ambulances as close to the scene of a mass murder as possible. You wouldn't want that, right? If you were in search and rescue, you would want to be parked at the fire station,
which is
500 yards away.
No, I would want to be parked in Gene Rosen's driveway.
Because that's where all the kids are going.
Right.
Yeah, this is the meetup place. It's like, you know how they have drills in school? 2 weeks before it happened. Now, kids, this is going over the PA system. If anybody comes in this school and starts mass murdering children, everybody go to Gene Rosen's house and sit in his driveway.
At the end of his driveway.
Plan of action. Yeah, yeah, the end of the driveway.
Exactly.
Don't knock on his door, just sit there.
Those aerial videos, and I don't know if you saw this one, and I can't remember if it was in your book, but did you see the one where you're talking about, maybe this is the same one, where it's over the firehouse, and
mm-hmm.
there's like lines of people going out of one door and back into the other?
I just saw that last night. Yeah.
What?
To give the appearance that there's more people there, they just have them going in a big circle, like a merry-go-round.
Victor, I don't get it, man.
Yeah. Well, and even when you see the photos, the overhead shots of the fire station, and you see the ambulances, except behind the ambulances, there's a whole bunch of cars that have parked in the ambulances. Now, I've known people that are in search and rescue, and rule number one is you never allow your vehicle to be parked in, because if you're parked in, guess what? You can't go to the hospital. You can't make a hasty getaway.
Of course.
But all the ambulances are parked in by other cars.
Yeah, you don't park in front of a fire station.
Yeah. Yeah, you go right to the school. I mean, imagine dragging dead or injured people the length of five football fields. Five football fields to get them from the school to the ambulances. How can that be? I mean, obviously, they didn't want anybody inside that school.
Anything from the mainstream media to explain this anomaly?
Not that I've seen. Believe me, I've paid as close attention to this story as just about anybody out there. And I wish I could say, yeah, this is how they explain it away. That the best possible method of saving people is to park as far away from the scene as possible. And then give me the rationale behind it. So I can say, oh, I understand why you'd want to drag somebody five football fields.
You know, and I forgot to mention this earlier, but thank you for watching Anderson Cooper, because that must not be easy, an easy thing to do, right?
Well, I actually didn't watch it live. I had one of the clips I saw on the internet. So the only thing, I'll tell you what, though, I'll give him credit for one thing. When the BP oil spill happened, he had the best coverage of anybody there was. So I do have to give him credit for that.
What did he do that was so great?
Well, he was down there hammering BP, where everybody else was trying to underplay the amount of damage there was and the amount of oil that was seeping out. He was playing hardball that time. So I give credit where credit's due.
Okay, so they probably told him to play hardball, because I don't think he could do anything on his own, right? He has to answer to his masters, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so the master said, go ahead, play hardball. Maybe they said something like, nobody else is playing hardball. We should play hardball so we can get the eyeballs. What channel is he on?
CNN.
And they're not doing too good lately, I guess.
CNN's tanking big time. They just had a big personnel shakeup there, and they brought somebody else in because the ratings are so low.
That's a shame. Yeah. That's that guy Piers Morgan.
He's really helping the network by blaspheming everything that Americans hold dear to them, like on a nightly basis,
right.
Coming out and saying, yeah, we should just urinate on your Constitution, take your guns away, and you're nothing but really just a crap country. So that's the way to get good ratings.
And how's that working out for them, do you know?
Not good.
Yeah.
No, he'll be gone within 3 months. He'll be gone from CNN.
You're probably right. He is entertaining, though, the way that he approaches his guests. I saw Ted Nugent on there, and he is rather entertaining.
Yeah, I did see a clip of that, and, you know, Ted Nugent's entertaining.
Definitely. I'd vote for him for president if I voted.
Yeah, I like
that. I don't know if I'm
going
to vote
him. Yeah, I've seen Ted Nugent 3 times in concert.
Oh, cool. This fella, Christopher Rodia, if I'm saying his name right, has the media paid any attention to this matter?
No, that's one of the big uncovered stories. And what happened here is that when they showed the car that Adam Lanza supposedly drove to Sandy Hook in, of course, when the pictures were taken, there was a license. And there were also the police dispatch tapes. And when they ran the tags the first time, the name that came back was Christopher Rodia, who was a felon and so forth. They said the car was registered in his name. Now, this here's a big problem. So what the powers that be said was that, wait. There's a case of mistaken identity because Christopher Rodia was pulled over that same morning, and the license they called in was from that incident. And then they say, see, it's been debunked. And then the people that believe the mainstream version say, oh, see, this has already been debunked. But it hasn't been debunked because the license plate that they called in from Sandy Hook was different than the license plate they called in from Rodia when he was pulled over 55 miles away by the Greenwich Police Department. Two completely different license plate numbers. So right there, he did get pulled over. The second thing is that I interviewed somebody and said, is it possible that this call that happened 55 miles away bleeded over into the Sandy Hook police dispatches? Now, if this is true, Dave, then that would mean that every police department in America, their calls are all bleeding over into every other precinct's or division's police calls. It would be like the Tower of Babel. It would be helter skelter. And this person said it's conceivable slightly that it could happen, but almost impossible. I mean, 55 miles is a long way. To have a local police department call in a number and it bleeds over into Sandy Hook right then and there when this was happening. So they tried to debunk it, but it didn't work.
And again, no mainstream media follow-up on this matter.
No, I don't even think the Christopher Rodia stuff even made it into the mainstream to start with. They don't want people knowing this.
Right.
Why would they want people to know that the car on the scene, when they called in the license plate, they said it was registered to somebody different, a felon.
Right. They go by the KISS model, keep it simple, stupid, right?
Mm-hmm.
This guy went in the school, he murdered all these people, all these kids, hope it doesn't happen again, let's take away your guns. There's nothing else to the story. Nothing.
Yeah. Believe us, shut up. And behave yourselves. Do what we tell you.
I don't know if I mentioned this or elaborated on that guy Cooper, but what he did was, it seemed to me, he mocked the people offering up alternative theories, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he was pretty belligerent and antagonistic when he confronted them because he's one of the culprits. We go back to Lieutenant Paul Vance and said he was going to arrest anyone that was passing misinformation. Anderson Cooper would maybe be the first one in the perp walk line. So he had a vested interest in pointing out that, hey, look, they're all crazy. Don't listen to them.
There's so many unanswered questions. Why would it make sense for somebody to click on the link here in this interview and purchase this book?
It's short and sweet. And like I said, it's taken me 6 weeks, 7 weeks, and talking to a lot of different people and watching a zillion different videos and compiling all this research. All the work's been done. Instead of watching, you know, like 30 different YouTube videos and spending hour after hour watching them, everything's right here compiled in one place. This is right. The best of the best, and it's all in one place. 32 pages. It's a quick read. And you can take this book then and give it to the neighbor, give it to somebody you work with, and say, you know what? Maybe there's more to the story here, like Paul Harvey used to say. And what's good about conspiracy researchers is that we do the work. We do the work for everyone else, put it all in one place, and it's all right there then. You can leaf through it, read it, and to me, I think it's an excellent book. And if ever there's an instance where you can see a change happening in America, someone told me that they thought Sandy Hook was the most important event that's happened since 9/11, because you can see this change now where especially younger people are looking at the world and saying, we don't believe you anymore. We don't believe you. And that's important.
Yeah, they got to take Anderson Cooper out with the trash and all the rest of those people. Of course, that's never going to happen because obviously this apparatus is really entwined with the military and the government. But any chance, not that it really would make that big of a deal, but any chance of getting this book in the hands of Anderson Cooper?
It's a good thought, actually. I should send one. I didn't even think of it, but I should put one in the mail for him, shouldn't I?
Yeah, I would. Like, I don't know anything about this guy, but he might pick it up and look at it. And he might repent and say, no, I can't do this anymore. That's something I don't understand, how these people could...
That's simple. It's like this. Here's Anderson Cooper, and these guys are making about $250,000 to $500,000 a year, depending on how high their star power is, okay? So if one of them does all of a sudden have a stroke of conscience, and they go to the head of CNN or the head of CBS or Fox News and say, look, we got to level with the people and tell them the truth about what happened. Well, immediately, if they don't get talked out of their ways, their crazy notions, they get dumped. And they know that there's hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of hungry people working at the local affiliates that would love to walk in and sit in that chair. So it all comes down to economics. It's nothing more than economics, is that if they tell the truth, first of all, they know that the truth will never get out, that their network will never allow it to reach the airwaves. And secondly, then they're going to be working in like a suburb of Buffalo, New York, making $30,000 a year, hosting the nightly news at 11 o'clock at night. Okay.
Right.
And somebody else is going to be sitting in Anderson Cooper's chair, pulling in $250,000 a year. So.
Right, doing what the big kahuna is telling them to do.
Yeah.
But I think the numbers are a lot bigger. I know that clown, Matt Lauer, there was some talk about, there was another anchor there that supposedly he didn't like and they got rid of, and people are coming up on the streets of Manhattan cursing him out, which is a good thing. But this clown, I think, makes like $25 million? Could that be, right?
Well, the big guys like Bill O'Reilly, they're up into the millions for sure. I'll tell you one thing I just saw last week, Glenn Beck. Last year, he's not on Fox anymore. He does his own pay-per-view thing, and he publishes a magazine, he publishes books, and on, he has a little empire. He made $80 million last year.
Jesus.
$80 million. He has surpassed Rush Limbaugh, even. So he's up in the stratosphere of big, big money. He devoted half an hour, one of his shows, to debunking all the conspiracies. So, you know, he has a vested interest, too, even though he wasn't disseminating any of the disinfo. You know, when you're up at that level, and somebody taps you on the shoulder and says, hey, Glenn, you know, spend half an hour and debunk these crazy conspiracy theories. He's like, okay, sure.
Right.
And he does.
Yeah, and of course, Glenn Beck is gone because he was getting too close to the people who control the media and so many other things. I think it was, and I don't follow the guy, but I never followed him, and I don't know much about him, but I do know that he had compiled a list of the 10 people who were bad for the United States. Did you know about that?
Yeah, he did that. Wasn't it something like 7 or 8 of them were Jewish?
9 of them.
9 of them, yeah.
Yeah, 9 out of 10 were Jews. Yeah. Right after that, he was gone. I love this saying. I don't know exactly how it goes, but it's something like, if you want to find out who controls you, learn who it is that you're not allowed to criticize.
Yeah.
Is that
perfect? Well, that makes perfect sense.
Victor Thorne, the author of Sandy Hook, a critical analysis of the media's provocative journalistic practices and how they spawned a wave of alternate conspiracy theories. Thanks so much for the time you took out explaining all this to the listeners. Thanks for writing the book. Again, you opened my eyes to a lot of stuff that I would not have known unless I had picked the book up and actually read it. Thanks again, Victor.
Well, it's been great to be here, and I urge everyone to keep their eyes open.